Welcome, my friend, to the Conversations for Financial Professionals podcast. I'm your host, Dominique Henderson. And as a veteran of the financial services industry, I was curious to find out why, despite all the good that financial professionals do, that yet the term financial advisor would clear the room so fast at a dinner party. Why was this? And what was this gap between consumers of financial services and the providers of those services? In this podcast, I seek to close this gap by having forward-moving conversations to advance the profession of giving financial advice and provide tools to the next generation of financial professionals to serve their clients at the highest level. You see, as providers of financial services, we have the awesome privilege of partnering with consumers to help change family trees, normalize the creation of wealth, and help the industry as a whole do less harm and more good. So it's time to sit back and enjoy the conversation. Welcome to another episode of Conversations for Financial Professionals, where we are shaping the next generation of advice. And I have a good one today, Miss Rianca Dorsonville. You are the co-founder and co-CEO of 2050 Wealth Partners, which focuses on empowering entrepreneurs and first-generation wealth builders to own their money story and pursue their biggest dreams. Through your work as a millennial certified financial planner, you bring us a unique perspective, not only on the current state of the financial services industry, but on how to stay relevant in an ever-changing world. You also serve as a member of CNBC's Digital Financial Advisor Council and CFP Board's Diversity Advisor Group. As a Forbes personal finance contributor, you've been recognized for your accomplishments and leaderships within the industry by leading publications and organizations such as Investment News in Article 2017, Women to Watch, Rising Star, Wealth Management's 10 to Watch in 2018. And you've been published numerous places as a financial planner and advocate for diversity, equity, and inclusion. You believe that first-generation wealth builders are a community that has been underserved by the financial planning profession for too long, and you are here to change those tides. Welcome to the podcast, my friend.
Thank you so much for having me, Dominique. It is a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, we finally got this thing together. We've been knowing each other, passing in different circles with all the different things that we do. And I'm happy to talk about this subject with you, to chop it up on really the talent pipeline. But the way I've entitled this was tools for hiring the best talent in the next 15 years. I think that's we're at this inflection point, so to speak, where, you know, we got some of the, I'll call myself the old guard at 45. I guess I can be a little bit of the old guard based on when I came into the industry. And where everybody's going, I think it's going to be different. It's going to be different, and I'm anxious, eager to make sure that we do this subject right. So if you're ready to hop in, we'll go ahead and do that.
Yeah, no, I love this topic, and even when you're saying that, I'm thinking back to about 7 years ago when I launched my firm. At that time, it was called Your Greatest Contribution. But I remember being at a trade organization conference and was just thinking the generation and the clientele that I want to serve, I know that they are nomads, some of them. Some of them are very transit and like will take a job on the East Coast and then move to the West Coast the next year. And I'm like, how can I make sure that I'm always available to them? And so I decided initially and on the onset very intentionally to create a virtual financial planning practice. And I never met with any of my clients in person unless it was intentional of just like, hey, let's go out for some lunch or breakfast or something, but it was never to meet for business. And here we are 6-7 years later where the industry, literally the financial service industry, is trying to catch up on how to be virtual because of a world pandemic that we've had. And I recall being laughed at by a few advisors when I told them I was going to have a virtual practice. They were like, well, how can you build relationships like that? And I'm like, I'll show you. I'll show you better than that. And here we are.
Good for you. Good. I've had this conversation a couple of times. And I think I'm glad you put this in parenthetically. I've had the conversation with new clients that have come on this year with, I'm so glad you do this virtually. You know, I've talked to a lot of people and it is like, there's no way I would feel comfortable coming in or whatever their excuse was or reasoning. And I was like, well, no, I started my firm this way. Like I didn't know that this was going to happen, of course. Right. No type of clairvoyance would allow for that. It's just that, to be honest, I was like, I was trying to do it on a shoestring budget, and I was like, what do I need office space for? Let me try this thing. And then so it's kind of worked out. But I agree, there are a lot of advisors in the space, a lot of financial professionals doing the catch-up game. And there's a lot of catching up to do, because not only do you have to switch your service model to some extent, you also got to get comfortable on video, and there's a lot of things to do that's more than a notion. So kudos for having what we may call foresight, or just luck.
Definitely some foresight. I'll put it on foresight, dummy.
I love it. So, okay, let's break this down into, I think, two parts. Let's get a grip around the problem, right? So I think we're both intelligent enough to identify and kind of understand the problem, and then kind of look at what some solutions are. As I kind of look at this, I'm like, I like a quote that you said recently on Morningstar with Morningstar. I think it was on the panel we were with Mark Tabergeon and the other fellow. But it said, the time is now for wealth management firms to leverage their decades of growth and innovation and reexamine their current culture in service to their staff and clients. So backdrop that to this context that I believe, and I know you believe the same way, Rianca, is that good financial advice has the opportunity to change family trees. Mm. So everybody deserves that particular opportunity, but we got an industry that's really focused on the wrong things, which I think is kind of the underlying sentiment of your statement. But I was going to let you unpack that there, because I think there's a lot there.
Yes, there is a lot to unpack here. And I think as financial planners, we have multiple roles in our seat. And especially if you are a manager or have some sort of ownership in a company, you have to realize that you are the caretaker of your team. You are the caretaker of your employees. And being a caretaker means understanding who that person holistically is. We do such a great job of that for our clients. Most of us do such a great job of that for our clients. We have discovery meetings. We find out the background of our client so that when they are making financial decisions, we as financial planners will know how to navigate this new landscape with them based on their family history when it comes to money, based on their family history, or just based on their history or lack of knowledge when it comes to finances. How are we not taking the time to learn about our colleagues and employees and our team members within our own firms? And understanding, and this is where the diversity of thought comes in, right? And it's just like, yes, we all took the same curriculum to obtain the CFP. We took all the same 6-7 courses, right? But it's our perspective that brings a different value and angle to the table when it comes to personal finance. And when it comes to the culture of the firm. And so we have to realize that, so going back to the re-examination of taking a temperature check of what is our current culture to our staff? What is our current culture to our clients? And understand that there is a great resignation happening right now in the United States. And will your company outlast that, right? Because we've all had the opportunity and time to take a step back and reevaluate, is this company aligned with my core values?
Well, and let me interject there, because I think there's something real beautiful that you said, and I will even expand it in that, yes, across my colleagues looking left to right, no matter if they look like me or not.
Correct.
And then across the industry, right? Because I just was in a conference last week, and if I look around, you know, it was a fairly small conference, but I looked around the room, there's not many like me. And then it's like, what type of care am I having for the profession? What type of care is the next person having for the profession to know that one day I'm not going to be sitting here. And the person that occupies my seat, what type of legacy did I leave for them? It sounds like that's where you're going with this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's something that Lizetta and I, who is the co-founder and co-CEO of 2050 Wealth Partners, we have constant communication and conversation around that, because we are in a phenomenal opportunity to create jobs. It's through our hard work. You know, we built this firm off of, you know, self-capital and just building the firm, you know, just with clients, no outside investments or anything like that. And understanding that we have this responsibility and role to be the caretakers of our team and allow them to give them permission to care for themselves. A really great example is yesterday. One of our team members, she's sick, right? And of course, you know, she's a Black woman, I'm a Black woman. And as Black women, we learn to just muscle through work. We always show up, even if we don't feel well. We always give 110%. And that's how burnout happens. That's the burnout culture that is being perpetrated out there. Like that's work hard. Right. And it's just like, no, you gonna burn yourself out, and that's not good. And so she mentioned that, you know, she had her throat was hurting really bad. She's going to the doctor. She's running around getting medicine. This is around like 9:30 in the morning. And so I sent her a message. I was like, hey, I'm about to FaceTime you. You don't have to say anything. Just shake your head yes or no. So she said, OK. So I FaceTime her. I can see that she's sick. She don't even have to say anything. And I was like, are you feeling well? And she was just like, you can see in her eyes, she was about to tear up. And she was like,
yeah, because nobody asks you these questions. They're right. Just like, what can you do? What, you know, like, you know, I often say, you know, I'm guilty of being a human doing instead of human being, right? Mm. It's all about my output. It's all about, you know, production, where there needs to be a level of care, exercise, definitely between team members. But yeah, I would say just the whole notion of being a good human being.
Right. And that's what she mentioned, right? She was like, but I'm going to get behind. I have so much work. I'm like, Send us your top five things that are urgent, important, and we'll figure out how to do it as a team.
Yeah.
Right. Like, what type of firm out there is actually being caretakers of their employees? Right. And so you have to think, if you're bringing in diverse talent, we already feel like we're at a deficit, right? And feeling how we have to prove ourselves. So of course we're gonna work ourselves to the bone. We're gonna work ourselves to the ground. We're gonna just work, because we don't wanna seem or look less than. We don't wanna seem. And so we're really retraining our team member who was at a different financial planner firm before, majority white men. And I'm like, that's not how we roll here. You have to take care of yourself. I'm like, because when you're not feeling well, that's when you make simple mistakes. When I know that this is not a mistake that you would typically make. So I was like, listen, please take the rest of today off.
Yeah.
And so you have to give your team members permission to feel, right? And that's what I mean about it's time to re-examine your culture of your firm, because that's how you're going to retain your top talent.
No, I agree. I've often said this to prospects, and it's probably a dirty secret of our industry, but I would say that the financial services industry has done its job to extract rents from the consumers of financial services without equal remuneration, meaning that we've got this lazy AUM model that a lot of us are guilty of using to run our businesses. And after your first 3 years in business, it's pretty much like really high margins. And I say that to say that I think there is a lot of what you're saying here that needs to be talked about internally in the industry, if you will. Mm-hmm. And then also letting consumers know, because I think consumers are getting more intelligent to realize where the true value in planning lies. And I'm of the persuasion that I don't know that the dinosaur model of the wirehouse or the broken dealer, yes, I said broken dealer, exist too much longer in the future. What are your thoughts there? I'm kind of skipping around about, but I wanted to see where you go, because you, you took it there about caring for people. So I want to go ahead and stay there.
Well, you said the broken. What is it?
The broken dealer.
The broken dealer. Dominique. Well, I agree that the AUM model is not a model that's inclusive of all of the clients that we can be serving, which is why I intentionally started my firm and I created a retainer model where it was an annual retainer paid on a quarterly basis, so that the Henrys out there, the high earners, not rich yet, where they were earning a substantial income but didn't have time on their side, right? Because they're young, to amass enough wealth, or they didn't have the inheritance from a family member to start their nest egg, which is typically what you need in order to work for these, in order to be a client for these traditional type of financial planning firms, where you'll have a AUM minimum or assets under management minimum of like $500,000 or $1 million. And that was the typical status quo for the firms I worked for before I decided to leave and start my own. Because I literally, Dominique, my heart broke when I had to tell peers or colleagues of my husband, I'm just like, no, I can't help you because you don't have $1 million yet. Like, how are we as personal financial planners saying no to people who want to become educated around personal finances?
I think it's asinine, to be honest. It's like, we are in a service industry and you just said, I can't serve you. Now, granted, there are people that fall out the scope of what you may do or what you specialize in, yada, yada, yada. But when somebody actually fits that parameter, but there's a firm minimum, you're like, that's ridiculous.
Right.
So no, I totally agree with you.
Yeah. And so listen, I understand the AUM model. It works. And just like you said, after like 3 years or something, you know, there's this nice profit margin when it comes with these clients, because you set them in stone. You've done a lot of the core key necessary things. And now it's more about maintenance. Life is happening, et cetera. Especially if you have some retirees, what's happening in their life, but probably giving some money away to the grandchildren or medical events or something else. Like, we work for every dollar that we earn at 2050 Wealth Partners. Our clients are young, they're getting married, they're changing jobs, they're having children, they're getting divorced, they are starting businesses. Like, literally, we are in the core phase of where clients are having these life events happening. And we're showing our value each and every day. Now, I understand, again, I run a business, so I see the attraction to the AUM model. And my question to other financial planners or financial advisors out there is there a way in which your model could be more inclusive to clients who want to work with you and where it makes business sense? So I'm not saying charge $100 a month on a retainer-based model. You can charge like $6,000-$7,000 a year and charge them on a quarterly basis, because their income can withstand that type of retainer. And the level of service that you're giving is worth it. Like, they see the value in the information that you're giving them.
Yeah. And I'm going to tell you where this marries to how we shape, if you will, the next 15 years for the talent coming in, is that from the seat I sit in, I see career changers. I see people that have these skill sets. Maybe it's a specialized skill set, maybe it's not. But the point is they have coworkers that they know of. They know of benefits. There's so many different ways that a firm owner can leverage what somebody's, you know, spent 10 or 15 years building up in social capital, to make the firm more profitable or add to the bottom line. And I think when I hear my career changer people in my community say, I can't find opportunities, you know, I need 2 or 3 years of experience, I'm like, wow, you know, is this more of a lack of vision from a firm owner standpoint, what are your thoughts on that?
Going back to this power partnership with Lizetta, I am extremely proud of the intentionality we have in interviewing. So we just recently hired an associate financial planner, and we both decided that we're going to lead with EQ and not IQ. If you're wow. coming to us, we already know that you have the technical skills. And if you don't, that's something that can be taught. We know that you have the coursework, because we all as CFPs have to take the same type of courses. Now, if you are coming from a firm that's not truly comprehensive in the depth that we go with our clients, that's something that can be taught. But EQ is something that we cannot teach you. And so any interviews that we do, we lead with EQ, emotional intelligence, and not IQ, because IQ is something that can be taught. EQ is something that is at your core.
Mm. No, I love that. I love that. Because there's a lot of, we've talked about transferable skill sets before. And, you know, granted, maybe as a newly minted grad from a financial planning program, you're not quite there. But when we're thinking about the mindset of people doing this type of work for the next 50 years, it's definitely not like the previous 50 years. So I'm really, really glad that you brought that in.
I have one more thing to add with that.
Yeah, no, go ahead. Say it.
It's not throwing us off too much. You have to understand also for the career changers, because we have spoken to some career changers as well. And where we know exactly where we are in our business at 2050 Wealth Partners. We know that we are in a growth mode. We know that we have a priority list or a wait list of 70 families waiting to work with us. We know it's only 2 lead financial advisors right now, 1 associate financial planner. We know that we need an associate financial planner that can hit the ground running. We don't have time to teach you right now all the technical skills that you might need to know, right? So we still leading with EQ, but that IQ needs to be up there as well. All right.
No, I get you. I would call it table stakes. That's what I've been calling it.
Right. So the thing is, right now where we are in our firm, a career changer may not work for us because of where we are. Now, our next hire could potentially be a career changer, right? Because all the training won't necessarily be on us. That's something that we can pass on to our AFPs. We are at a point in our firm where we have stability and not growing at a rapid pace, where we just need someone to like be able to understand the difference between a Roth traditional, can look at someone's 401k plan and be able to select investments, come to us just for review based on our investment philosophy. Something like that may not be able to be easy to grasp for career changers. And so understand that it's not you, it's really the firm.
No, that's a good point. So what I do with this community, just as an aside, is I try to show them, when you're looking for a firm, there's some stages in let's say landmarks you want to go through. The first is you want to sit down and evaluate your why. Why are you changing from whatever you were doing to this? That needs to be central and important, and it needs to be your North Star. Because to be honest, if you do a good job on figuring out your why, it's going to really lead you to a who, right? Because that who is the person that will like probably mentor you, and you'll see some things that you like. And then, of course, the how kind of follows, right? So the how and the who can sometimes be swapped. But the point is, if you focus on your why first, those next things lead into that. And you can then start to be like, oh, like you can be like Chloe Moore, where it's like she graduated, she knew she wanted to work for an RIA only firm in this part of the country. And so her short list became, you know, really finite. And I think defined. I think so many people just go, oh, I'll just do whatever. And they don't have this laser focused approach. It's more of a shotgun. And so that's where they get disappointed. But I totally agree with you. It's not always them. It could be the firm. Let me ask you this. When we talk about solutions, there's a lot of different ways that we can approach this, right? Well, let me just ask you, how early do we do this? Do we start at the college level? Like, I'm a big fan of exposure, but I'm like, man, okay, if we're thinking about the next 50 years in this industry, where does the talent come from? I mean, I know we got a lot of people sitting on the bench in the wrong place. I get that. But what are your thoughts about where we start?
As early as possible. You know, and I think exposing personal finance to our youth at an early age will definitely help the pipeline, because they'll see someone that looks like you, Dominique, or someone who looks like me talking about personal finance. And then we can share that there is a career in something about just talking about personal finance. That's what I do every day. Just talk about personal finance. And the quicker that we can normalize that wealth building is no longer reserved just for the wealthy, the easier we can make it to attract diverse backgrounds to the field.
Ooh, say that again. Normalizing wealth building. That is a whole podcast on its own merit.
Yeah.
Because I think we both know Shel Bernard. We were having a conversation right before the pandemic. And she was telling me how she was at a HBCU, and in the room, I don't know how many of them, let's call them 50 people in the room, most of them looking like us. And unfortunately, they didn't even know financial planning was a profession. And I'm like, this is in 2019, 2020, whenever we had this talk. So I think there's a lot to be said about the whole exposure deal.
Yeah.
I'll put one more thing parenthetically in here. Before I hand it back over, is my youngest and my middle boy, while they were at Prairie View for a couple of semesters, they took a personal financial planning class. And I tried to get them in Danny Harvey's class. But anyways, the point is they were like, man, I didn't even know this existed. And I'm like, I talk about this all the time. I tell you to listen to your dad. But anyways, the point is, even at that age, they still weren't exposed. So I think you're hitting the nail on the head in that we can do a lot for doing more in exposure. What are some ways that you, I mean, obviously we got, you know, organizations like Quad A and BLX and all these things that are happening. Any big thoughts, macro thoughts on how we may be able to maybe make that effort happen faster or turn it over faster?
I think what we all have to realize is that this is a marathon and not a sprint. And as quickly as we want to see change, know that it's going to take persistence, consistence, and time.
Mm.
And that knowing that these small mustard seeds that we are planting is going to make an instrumental impact 50 years from now. So continue to plant your mustard seeds. However small you think it is, just know you're impacting people in so many ways. And it's a ripple effect. I continue to have people come at Morningstar and just about DEI and writing about it and all this. I'm a financial planner. It just so happens that I'm also a Black woman as well.
Yeah.
I can talk about some things that most people probably can't talk about or have experience because I am a Black woman in the financial service industry. So I decided that one of my platforms is going to be talking about this. Yes. I can talk about tax planning. I can talk about, you know, estate strategies and all of this stuff. And I can talk about this, you know. And there are people that are listening that I didn't even know was listening, Dominique. And it's white people who are listening, having some self-reflection, and they're saying, what can we do about it? That is so major. That 'cause we, as in Black people, we can't do it alone. And we're going to need the industry's help. And there are people, there are specifically white women who are constantly coming up to me saying, listen, this is a torch I'm willing to carry. And you just either, I'm doing the research, right? They're doing their homework first and coming to ask questions. It's not, what can I do to help? It's like, this is what I read. Do you think that this is the best way forward? Like, is there a different direction I can take? So you can see that they've invested some time to with the homework, and they've invested their own time to be able to say, like, here's what I'm doing. And if there's a better way or something, just let me know, versus coming to me for the solution. So going back to your question, macro, just understanding that literally everything that you're doing, Dominique, is making a valuable impact. And for the people who think what they're doing is so small, know that it's a ripple effect. And understanding that this is a long journey for all of us, and we have to calendarize our values. What is important to us is reflected on our calendar. So if diversity, equity, and inclusion is something that's important for your firm or your firm's culture, it's not something that can just happen once a year. It's something that has to be on a quarterly basis that you're intentionally talking about. Whether it's you are going out, there are programs out there so we don't have to start from scratch, like Jumpstart. Go to an elementary school and volunteer once a quarter. That's an hour of your time. Once a quarter, and just teach personal finance, right? And they'll see someone who looks like them. So our industry is doing something, creating awards like the See It, Be It Role Model Awards, which is great, because we should normalize seeing a Black woman on a financial service industry magazine. And that's not something that's just like, oh, wow, this is the first, right? It's more so like, oh, wow, this is so great to see. I love her hair and how it's really, you know, like it's it shouldn't be something that it's something that should definitely be celebrated, but it's something, it's not, it shouldn't be something that's not normalized.
No, I hear what you're saying. I think there's so many different in what I've loved, very few things, and I'm kind of quoting Seth Godin. We had a talk on season one, and he mentioned that there were very few things that the pandemic afforded us, but one of them was this great resignation that you alluded to earlier, where people had a chance to kind of, it stopped, not because we intentionally made it stop. It was definitely out of our control, but it gave us the time to reflect. Mm-hmm. And I've had so many conversations with career changers that finally unplugged from the matrix. And they were just like, I'm taking that red pill, man. Like, I'm tired of this. You know, life's too short. And I think that's a good thing. And I'm waiting for, hopefully anticipating that the same thing happens in this industry, right? There's so much good that we can do. And like my podcast says at the opening, like, you still say financial advisor in 2021 at a dinner party and you clear the room. So we got to get that normalized so that people don't feel like when they hear this name or this term that people are trying to run and shove insurance down their throat or something like that. Yeah. They're like, no, this is a person that can actually change my family tree. And that's the way they need to look at it. And hopefully that's what the generation after us will see.
Yeah. Normalizing that, normalizing having a financial planner as well. I was just talking to a young lady in her early 20s who has a podcast as well. And we were talking about what to do with your first big girl salary, right? And when is there a time for me to, do I need a financial planner right now? And so I listed off many ways in which having a financial planner can be of value. And it was mind blowing to her because, and I keep sharing with people, it's like, you don't know what you don't know. And financial planners save you from yourself, right?
Yeah. Keep you from paying stupid tax.
Oh, yes. Yes. Everything is not meant to be DIY'd. And personal finance is definitely not one of them. Yes. Do your foundation, have your foundation set, do your homework. And when you feel like you've hit a brick wall or right before you hit that brick wall, ask for professional help and pay for the service because it's worth it.
No, I agree. This has been great. As you know, this is a podcast to help empower the aspiring financial professional, existing financial professional, with this knowledge to take their client relationships to the next level. With that being said, what word or words of wisdom would you leave with the audience, Rion?
Bring your full self to the table every single day, honey. Like, this is me at my client meetings. And they look forward to meeting with me because they just know that they're going to get this Rionka. And I'm talking about your personal finances. I put my glasses on and then I take them off. They're like, oh, Rionka just took off her glasses. Like, And then they'll lean back. But it's just like, they're my family. And I, when we welcome them to 2050 Wealth Partners, I'm like, you're in the client family now, and know that you're not alone. And they literally, before making any type of major decision, however small or minor or major, like, they always check in with us first. So what I would share with you, newly minted, you know, financial planners or even seasoned ones, don't be afraid to bring your personality, to bring your true self to the table, because that is the differentiator. There is no other Rianca out there, honey. And I take pride in that. I quote Christopher Wallace all the time. Okay? especially when we talk about taxes, I'm like, listen, baby, more money, more problems, as the late Christopher Wallace said, okay? And this is what we have to work with. Are you ready for some tax projections and tax planning? We need to contact your CPA. And I'm like, man, Rianca was going to say that. So, but me being me and bringing my full self to the table allows them to feel comfortable and financially undress, which is the most difficult thing that a person can do. I read an article recently that said people would rather talk about their sex life than their financial life. And so if I can make it easy for my clients to talk about their personal financial life, I am doing my job, and I'm doing it well.
No, I agree. I agree. I think what my takeaway is from what you just said is that when we're looking at the profession 10, 15, 20, 50 years from now, we're going to see, hopefully, at least I've been inspired to see this way, is that people will embody themselves, more of their own personality, and bring that into the client relationship, right? This is so much boring, black and white, Monte Carlo simulation, blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, nobody hires us for that stuff. They hire us for the potential of what their life could be when we close that gap on what they don't know. So it's a treat. It's a privilege to be in this seat. And I only hope that the next generation sees it that way also. So thank you for your time. Thank you for your wisdom. Really, really appreciate you.
Thank you for having me, Dominic. It's been a pure pleasure.
All right. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Talk soon.
Hey there. I hope you really enjoyed this conversation. Before we go, just a few things. First, the best way to retain what you just learned is to do more than just listen. You might want to write down your most important takeaway and then give yourself a deadline to apply it. For bonus points, you might also let someone hold you accountable to that deadline. Next, remember that the only way more people will know about this podcast is if you share it. You can do that by sharing a link to this episode on your social media or by leaving a review on iTunes so that it reaches a wider audience. I'd appreciate it if you took the time to do either or both. And finally, if you'd like to join my free community to learn more about how you can become a next generation financial professional, please visit my website at www.domhendersonsr.com and click the button that says, I'd like to learn more. I'd love to hear from you and point you in the right direction. Bye for now, until our next conversation.